hats off.
Dog Elliot, happy summertime 2018. Barbecue like you mean it.
Thank you. Let me put my vagina hat on for this.
Hey, no, yeah, you're borrowing mine.
It's a camouflage one with plenty of buck lure on it.
Hey, we were reading in the paper this morning. How long ago did those kids stage the die-in at your concert? Was that last week, week before?
You know, I have quite a radar. You guys have always appreciated it. Yeah. I think I've caught you genuflecting at my omniscient radar more often than I. And I know that's one of the many reasons why you just love me, dear.
You do. Yes.
As omniscient as my radar is, it doesn't pick up on bullshit. it just doesn't pick up on stupid or inconsequential. I mean, it reads it and I get a notice on occasion. But, you know, I think I summarized it best as only I could. At the concert last night, before, probably without question, the most emotional song I do, the song Fred Bear, which I dedicate to my hunting buddies every night and my family, and I reminisce how my dad and mom raised me and disciplined me and guided me on the True North Compass setting, and I dedicate it to the cops and the firefighters and the first responders and the U.S. Army and the Navy and the Air Force and the Marines and the National Guard and the Coast Guard. Every night it's a very emotional moment. Last night was more emotional than any because I've seen all the fake news and all the hate and all the lying media, and in a very gentlemanly voice, and I inserted certain street slang I will not repeat
okay.
for your radio show.
Thank you.
But I mentioned that we pray for all victims of crime and that we fight as American activists to fix the engineered recidivism and the failure of our criminal Department of Justice and court systems that do not intervene even after numerous glowing warning signs. And most innocent victims could have been saved if the bureaucrats and the corruption and criminality and abuse of power in our government and in our justice system would have worked. So how someone can turn from heartbreak and grieving at the loss of a loved one and then generate hate towards Ted Nugent, who had nothing to do with it except support their grief and offer prayers to help them heal. So, you know, we have fun on the radio and we talk because I'm the funniest guy in the world. In fact, you guys probably appreciate that I'm the only interview you can do where you can actually sense that my afro catches fire live on the air. because Richard Pryor was a hero of mine. But when I get serious, it's times like this that a real dedicated, sincere, connected, down-to-earth, loving, and giving individual does the right thing. And those would be the things that me and my band and my crew and my family, you, I know you, the people in my audience, we care. So you have to be a real loser to attack people who actually support you during your time of grieving. And I'll leave it at that.
Hey, yeah. Ted, July 24th yep, well is the put. Show, Rose Music Center. You know, I don't have a problem with people I disagree with if they speak intelligently correct. On an issue. For you, when did you feel at your part of your career, because whether you disagree or agree with Ted Nugent, you speak intelligently about your passion, what you're passionate in. When did you feel comfortable that you could talk about politics and have an intelligent conversation about it?
Well, I got to tell you, it was really early on, probably before you guys were born. I mean, I swear to God, it was back in the 1960s. You know, it was the beginning of your gig. It was the beginning of underground radio, where FM radio started playing more songs by various artists other than their hit singles. You know, it was quite a transitional period for music because people loved the albums. People loved the deep cuts. People loved the spirit of the artist that you could better grasp and celebrate beyond the top 40 single that they put out. So I would do a lot of radio when you started having conversations and interviews, and it was a new world of interview. But they wanted to know about the music, and they would ask me where the energy comes from because I have a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And it would scare the hippies. And they would ask me, and I'd say, well, I live a full life. And this was back when I was just a mushy-brained teenager.
Yeah,
I wasn't smart by any stretch of the imagination. I was kind of the ultimate street doofus. but effervescent nonetheless. And I would tell them, because I just spent a weekend with my dad bow hunting, and they would kind of furrow their brow and squint and go, "Bow hunting? You kill animals?" You know, and I would run into that kind of abject ignorance and, you know, dope-inspired, you know, hate and, you know, self-imposed mental limitations. And you know me, God gave me more wit than you guys, so I make sure I use it adequately. And I would dance on their skulls and just express how perfect the weekend of soul cleansing, battery charging, a time with my family on the Tittabawassee River, you know, gathering firewood and water and cooking slabs of bacon in a cast iron skillet and stalking the woods for squirrels and grouse and deer and not killing anything but having the time of my life, because it's such an escape. It's such a physics of spirituality. And of course, as I explained those details, it would confuse them even further. but I realized, because people would start giving me feedback on the street, and God knows how much I love feedback, and they would express how funny it was and how stupid the question was and how ignorant the interviewer was attacking me because I carried a gun or because I believed in self-defense or as a member of the NRA. So I think instinctually and spontaneously I was able to answer the dumbing down of America front line, that one and one equals two. Whether you like the number two or not, you're going to have to live with it. And if you don't and resist, I might have to take that two, put some sharp edges on it, and shove it up your and your laughter is a perfect response, because you got to admit, that's some funny
That's some funny stuff.
And you know what? Three would hurt more, but we're glad you used a two.
And that is Ted Nugent. He's going to be at the Rhodes Music Center on Tuesday night. The new single, The Music Made Me Do It. How did you come about this song?
Well, God, I'm 70 years clean and sober. I'm having so much fun out here. I occasionally have a hiccup of guilt. I'm having so much damn fun. I got Greg Smith on bass guitar, Jason Heartless on drums. I got the best crew in the world. We get to play Cat Scratch Fever, Wang Dang, Sweet Poon Tang, Free For All, Dog Eat Dog,
Hey Baby,
Stranglehold, and Great White Buffalo, and yes, Fred Bear every night. How can you not be inspired?
Right, right.
It's just a musical American dream orgy every day of my unbelievable. Have you seen pictures of Mrs. Nugent?
I have. Yes. Google her. She's
Shemaine. You're asking me where the inspiration comes from?
Mm.
Too bad you can't sneak a peek when she's stepping out of the dryer and help her dry off. I play my Gibson Birdlands through loud amps every day, and it makes really wonderful noises, and I constantly hone the tone and the voice of my guitars, just like the mystical flight of the arrow. I shoot my bow every day, and it's a Zen, it's a samurai thing when you become the path of your arrow, and it's the same kind of 100% immersion, the samurai Zen physics of spirituality.
You're the best, Ted.
We love you, Ted.
So,
these sexy ass licks just blow up. So the song, The Music Made Me Do It, you listen, every lick, every song on this record is classic Ted Nugent, Cat Scratch Fever intro, Free For All intro, Dog Eat Dog intro, Stranglehold intro, Great White Buffalo intro, all these cranking, what Les Paul and Dwayne Eddy and Lonnie Mack and all the guitar players, they wish they would come up with stuff like this. And the Music Made Me Do It is just this flurry of just nasty, wonderful, grinding chordal patterns that are, in the music world, they're probably against the law. But it's just... And when you make that kind of noise, what else can you sing but, "Oh, yeah, the music made me do it. Not a damn thing I can do." And it just cranks, and I leave this little jam session exhausted, and then I go back and write down these lyrics and make these songs. I surround myself with Greg and Jason, and all hell breaks loose. So We have this lucky, magical, mystical, miracle door we can walk through any time and turn into drunk teenagers with loud amplifiers getting our first piece of ass.
Paint the picture.
Hey, Ted, we had Paul Rogers on. He said he didn't care when I asked him this question, but we had Joe Elliott on from Def Leppard. He said he did care. Do you care about Rock and Roll Hall of Fame being in, yes or no?
I do, but not for me. I care because it says Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, Elvis Presley, The Stones, The Beatles, The Who, The Kinks, because it pays homage and genuflex at the altar of these musical powers, this authority that is such a fortifying quality of life upgrade in every human being. So I would like them to be honest and tell Patti Smith to get out, Grandmaster Flash, get out, Madonna, get out, ABBA, get out, and put in REO Speedwagon, people who are real rock and rollers.
Amen, brother.
Yeah, we feel the same way.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, with your career, is there anything you want to do yet? Is this...
Is that a career?
You got a career. A good one.
Hey, Beat's working for a living.
Yeah, how long are you going to go?
You know, God, you know, the guy said the other night, I mean, you go to my Facebook, which is just wondrous, man, this social media, there's no ambiguity out there. There's still a lot of lying and fake news, which I find hysterical because it's so obvious. But you listen to the millions of people on my Facebook that are gaga, that they've been to Amboy Duke shows, the damn Yankees shows, Ted Nugent shows in 74, 75, 76, 77, 78, 79, 80, 80. They've been to hundreds of my shows, and they'll say last night in Roanoke was the most intense, outrageous Ted Nugent concert they've ever been to. And somebody in my crew the other day said, you know, if the 25-year-old Ted Nugent showed up, you'd kick his ass. So I'm a lucky guy. I have a wonderful family. I'm healthy. I thank God every day. I have the best friends and the best people around me, my crew. I cannot say enough about my crew, my management, everybody in my life are just wonderful, wonderful, hardworking, loving, giving, funny, cocky human beings. And when you have that ingredients, my God, you know, the song I wrote, and again, I didn't write it, I just played it, and it became a song. 1975, 76, Working Hard, Playing Hard, maybe on the Cat Scratch album. And it said, the first verse goes, man started out living in a cave, felt right at home, nobody's slave. All he wanted was a happy home, just wanted to be left alone. Now it's my turn to show my stuff. It's sometimes fun, it's sometimes rough, but I'm working hard to earn my way. Lucky me, my work is play.
Nice.
Working hard, playing hard, makes it through the day and the night. So I'm a lucky son of a bitch, and boy, you know I know I am.
Hey, speaking of friends, you're friends with Sarah Palin, and she got duped in that Sacha Baron Cohen thing where he's pretending to be a disabled vet and interviewing people. Have you talked to her about that?
No, I haven't, but I know Sarah. She's a great, great human being. She's one of the finest people walking this earth. But there is a political correctness that does touch everybody except me. And she's just a little too polite, which is a great thing. We should all aspire to be too polite. But see, I smell rats coming. And Michael Moore, speaking of rats, Michael Moore tried that crap with me on his TV Nation show, and I ripped his head off and down his neck before he even knew I was there. And I wish this Sacha Cohen would try that with me. Because I would do with him like I did with Pierce Morgan and other people that think they have the upper hand on the author of Wango Tango. And I would eat his family tree and it in his face.
June 24th.
God bless America.
Rose Music Center.
America's great. Yeah. You make it great, Ted.
Yeah. Hey, you know, a follow-up to that career question, damn Yankees, would they ever come back?
Boy, would that be awesome. You know, I do this Danger Zone stuff every night where people pay a lot of money to come out and hang out and have a ginger ale with me, and we donate it to children's charities and military charities. And so I get to hang out with working hard, playing hard, you know, great families every night. And I'm telling you, that's the first question every night everybody asks me, if the damn Yankees will get back together. And I cannot tell you how I adore Tommy Shaw.
And I tell you what, Ted, I saw Jack Blades over the weekend. The Night Ranger played a festival here, and they play damn Yankee songs, and the crowd just goes nuts.
Absolutely.
Goes nuts.
In fact, we end the night. Well, I shouldn't let the cat out of the bag, but he's already bit everybody. we whip out Don't Tread. Don't Tread on Me at the very end of the night. And playing with those guys was another perfect example of how lucky I am, because they're world-class virtuosos, Tommy, Michael, Jack, and they're just revered in the world of music, not just for their virtuosity, but because they're professionals and gentlemen. They have integrity, they're honest, they're there for you. I use the term blood brothers. If I needed an emergency in life, those are three of the people in my life that would be there for me. So I cannot, you know, praise them enough, but they are busy little rascal.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
And I am a busy, tall rascal.
All right.
And we would love to do it. We will work on at least getting together to make one great piece of music, whether it's one or two songs, I don't know. But, you know, we're all young at heart. All those guys are just loaded with piss and vinegar. And I would say that it's not impossible by any means, and I think it's something we should aspire to.
Hey, Ted Nugent, I know we have a ton of hunters that listen to this program, and how about this drone hunting? Are they going to outlaw that? There's a big controversy now with people, hunters that are using drones for spotting. How do you feel about that? I don't like it.
Well, let me tell you, if you want to be primitive, make your own bow, get some sinew from the leg of a deer and make your own string. And go get some good cedar and make your own arrows. It's very, very, it's quite a task. And then chip and hone your own obsidian broadheads and kill a turkey and cut them and make your own arrows. If you want to go primitive, hey, that's awesome. That's really quite an accomplishment. But we need to kill deer. Write it down. We need to kill lots of deer. And the worst crime against nature and freedom is when the government of the United States has the audacity to take our tax dollars to hire sharpshooters to kill our deer, when they have regulations and laws that forbid we the people to kill an adequate number of deer. That being said, and irrefutable evidence supporting that, like everything I say, if you want to hire your uncle with a helicopter to find out where the deer are, if you want to use a rangefinder, if you want to use a trajectory compensation,
you're okay with that.
Whatever you need to do to get outdoors and kill the deer that need to be killed, have a nice day. I think we need to be more open-minded, that if a farmer doesn't want sport, let's say he doesn't want sport, he's not looking for a challenge, but he sees deer from his combine. You know he has to kill some deer. By all scientific considerations, there's a percentage of deer on his farm that have to die every year. What if he just wants venison? What man could tell that landowner that he can't pull the shotgun out of his combine and shoot the damn deer? Now, that's not how I want to do it. I like to bow hunt. I like to figure them out. I like the challenge. I like poking my eyes out with briars on the way to my stand before daylight in the morning.
Yeah.
I like the challenge of bow hunting. But if someone else just wants venison, who amongst us can tell that man how he accomplishes the two important things? Reducing the deer herd and getting venison. Leave us alone.
What's the bet for you? What's your favorite animal when you go bow hunting to track? Kind of like you said, you know, you get a trail, you get on. What's the most elusive animal that you hunt with the bow?
Geez, you know, white-tailed deer in North America is the supreme challenge. I've hunted, you know, every animal over in Africa, and I know guys that have hunted the bongo and the certain Sitatunga antelope and some of the very, very jungle in ensconced creatures of magical escapism. But for me, my Michigan swamp, when I get that bow and arrow and those mornings start getting cold And that instinct, that reasoning predator, that resource steward, that real hands-on environmentalist heart and soul comes to the forefront to balance the herd and feed my family. I grab that bow and arrow, and I walk those sacred grounds that I did with my dad and my uncle and Fred Bear, and I'm going to tell you, it's out of body. The white-tailed deer represents what the great white buffalo represented to the native peoples, that it is the mystical, spiritual brother that brings us life, and that we have a moral, spiritual, intellectual obligation to balance that herd, make room for next year's production. It's as serious as parenthood, and we the people experimenting, putting constitutional pressure on our elected employees. Those are the driving forces of a free man, and it's so mystical, it's so fortifying and so enveloping that if Elvis and Jimi Hendrix and Bon Scott and Keith Moon and John Belushi, if they would have been bow hunters, they would still be alive today because they would have craved that connection to the earth like those of us in the hunting community do. And it's a very, very special endeavor. And I would encourage everybody listening to go down to your local archery shop, meet somebody who can teach you the mystical flight of the arrow, and become the ultimate conservationist and be the steward of the quality air, soil, and water wildlife habitat that is the driving force of the American hunting family.
Now, and there Ted, it is. That's it.
Ted, Torg and I are huge fans of the History Channel show Alone. How would Mr. Ted Nugent do on Alone?
Well, you could drop me butt naked in the jungles of the Amazon. I'd be king in 24 hours.
You could go on Naked and Afraid, Ted.
Naked and Afraid.
You
got to
do the mic drop on that one.
You know, I've been living a wild life. I mean, both wild, the wildest of rock and roll, if I may. And I'm not quite Natty Bumpo or Jeremiah Johnson, but I've done a lot of wilderness stuff. I was the last guy to get out of the Sudan alive in 1978 when the rebels killed everybody. I connected with the Watusi and the Maasai, and we became blood brothers, and they helped me escape the murderers. And I've been in deep in the bowels of Alaska, you know, where the pilot crashed, and I had to sustain myself by myself for a little while. I've been in wilderness survival situations where my dad, you know, I was a Boy Scout. Improvise, adapt, overcome, be prepared. And I relish those challenges. I mean, I went into some quicksand on my own fen. Do you know what a fen is?
No.
That's why you have me on the radio.
Yes.
A fen is a miraculous wetland variation that is somewhere between a marsh and a swamp.
Okay.
And it's most notable for its incidence of quicksand. And I own the largest fen east of the Mississippi, according to the botanists that study it every year. And the reason my fen is so flourishing is because I kill enough animals every year to protect the gentle and delicate and critical understory. For example, on my fen, I have a thriving population of Mitchell satyr butterflies, which are endangered everywhere else because all the other fen owners fail to kill enough deer who eat the Christmas tree fern, which is critical habitat for the Mitchell satyr butterfly. Huh. How am I doing? Is
huh. this a fascinating Ted, interview? You're doing great.
Wow.
But anyhow, so anyhow, I got into some quicksand tracking a doe. I got a triple on three does one morning with my bow and arrow. And I'm tracking these does, and I go into this goop up to my nuts, and I thought I was going under, and I was able to grab an overhanging maple branch, and slowly but very slowly over hours, just barely wiggle myself, so I became heading for horizontal. And it was a scary moment. I really thought I was going in. But those are the moments that you realize if you're brought up in a farming, ranching, outdoor, hunting, fishing, trapping
you
environment,
get those skills.
You're just better prepared for everything.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yep. Well, Ted, we'll see you Tuesday night at the Rose Music Center, man. Always a pleasure.
Well, back at you. Thanks for letting me mouth off. I love this country. God bless America. Everybody else can kiss my ass.
Thanks, Ted.
Thanks, Ted.
Live it up.